so that she could introduce me. So I'm going to introduce me. Good morning again. My name is Shay, and I am visiting from St. Paul, Minnesota, which is just as cold and snowy as you are here. So, probably, yeah. No, I think you've had more snow. This morning, the reading that I chose is from Ralph Waldo Emerson, and it is adapted from his essay called Circles. It's a short little excerpt from that. The eye is the first circle. The horizon which it forms is the second, and throughout nature this primary figure is repeated without end. St. Augustine described the nature of God as a circle whose center was everywhere and its circumference nowhere. Our life is an apprenticeship to the truth that around every circle another can be drawn, that there is no end in nature, but every end is a beginning, that there is always another dawn risen on mid-noon, and under every deep, a lower deep opens. There are no fixtures in nature. The universe is fluid and volatile. Permanence is but a word of degrees. Our globe, a transparent law, not a mass of facts. The law dissolves the facts and holds it fluid. Everything looks permanent until its secret is known. The keys of every person is our thoughts. Sturdy and defying though we look, we have a helm which we obey, which is the idea after which all of our facts are classified. We can only be reformed by showing ourselves new ideas, which command the old. The life of a human is a self-evolving circle, which from a ring imperceptibly small, rushes on all sides outwards to new and larger circles, and that without end. The heart refuses to be imprisoned. In its first and narrowest pulses, it already tends outward with a vast force and to immense and innumerable expansions. Life is a series of surprises. I'm going to begin my sermon with a poem that speaks deeply to me, especially at this time of the year, and hopefully will be meaningful for you. This is Where the Light Begins by Jan Richardson. Perhaps it does not begin. Perhaps it is always. Perhaps it takes a lifetime to open our eyes to learn to see what has forever shimmered in front of us. The luminous line of the map in the dark, the vigil flame in the house of the heart, the love so searing we cannot keep from singing, from crying out in testimony and praise. Perhaps this day will be the mountain over which the dawn breaks. Perhaps we will turn our face toward it, toward what has always been. Perhaps our eyes will finally open in ancient recognition, willingly dazzled, illuminated at last. Perhaps this day the light begins in us. When I was a child, I went to Mass at our local Catholic church every Sunday with my family, and every Sunday I listened and watched as the congregation mumbled and mouthed their way through old hymns, accompanied by a man with a guitar who was usually drowned out by the huge pipe organ being played by someone who had never been trained on how to use such an organ. This morning, as we were sitting here getting ready for service, Herb and I were talking about this beautiful organ and how they never get to use it because no one knows how to play it. And I said, that's a good thing. It's a good thing.
Ours is too loud to make a few space.
Yes. So I would sit in church and listen to this organ drown out everything being played by someone who didn't know how to play it. And I would look around and look at the sort of somber kind of unanimated faces of the people singing and think, there is no life in this place. So I was 8 years old when I started teaching myself how to play piano on the old electric keyboard that we had in our basement that nobody knew how to play. And I was 9 when I decided that my church needed someone who could play a different kind of music on a different kind of instrument. And so I approached the man with the guitar, who was our song leader, And I said, I have a proposal for you. If you can find me an updated electric keyboard, this was the early 80s, so they were everywhere. If you can find me an updated electric keyboard, I will offer you my new skill as an alternative to the traditional music that we usually have. And he agreed, and he took me up on that offer, and we played together in Mass every Sunday for 10 years, inspiring each other and the congregation, bringing in new and different songs, and encouraging others to try new things and step out of our comfort zones. Together, we helped that community begin to thrive once again, infusing worship services with light and love and music and life. Perhaps this is the day the light begins in us. We live in a world burst wide open by technology, in a generation ungrounded in the traditional religion of their parents and grandparents, in a time when our congregational demographics are changing dramatically. The economic and political climates of our country are putting pressure on a multitude of social justice issues. How do we as Unitarian Universalists take our values and our principles and the truths that we hold in the very cores of us and emerge into our world in ways that infuse it with compassion, justice, and love? What does it look like to live our beliefs out loud? What does it require of us? And how can we do it in ways that allow all voices to be heard, in ways that speak and make space for the diverse ideas and experiences of each of us? How can we inspire change with the light that begins in us without letting ourselves burn out? As Emerson said, everything looks permanent until its secret is known. I once heard leadership trainer Tyson Casey speak about what he called sustainable leadership. I have since learned through reading and research that what he described is most commonly known as adaptive leadership, if you've heard of that. This is a type of leadership that rises and ceases moment by moment, floating on impermanence and interdependence. Life is a series of surprises, and the key to adaptive sustainable leadership is this. In each moment, at the encounter of each surprise, we must ask ourselves, what form of leadership is called for in this moment that can cultivate the conditions for life? What can I do in this moment to create more conditions for life? And then we ask ourselves, in this moment, is this leadership role mine to inhabit? Are my ideas the ones that need to be heard right now? Is my voice the one that needs to be speaking right now? Or is this moment for somebody else to fill? In our reading, we heard Emerson say, the life of a human is a self-evolving circle. From a ring imperceptibly small, rushes on all sides outwards to new and larger circles, and that without end. The heart refuses to be imprisoned. Its first and narrowest pulse is already pushing it outwards with a vast force. It is in our nature, it is in our hearts to expand outwards, to emerge into the world with the vast force of our convictions and our compassion. Our faith calls us to contemplation and personal growth, to seek our own individualized truths, and our faith calls us to action. Unitarian Universalism is not and cannot be, if we are to thrive, just a Sunday religion. We as congregations, as individual, and as individuals cannot live fully into our principles if we do not let them move us into creating a just and sustainable world, a world in which we are constantly looking for opportunities to cultivate the conditions for life. During my second year of seminary, I was in Berkeley, going to school there, and my seminary went through a really tough time, a lot of challenges. And many students decided that it was better for them and their learning to withdraw and continue their studies at other schools. And I was staying. I decided to stay, and I was watching my school slowly sinking and feeling absolutely powerless to do anything about it. And then one morning, the student body president approached me with a request. Our student body elected representative to the Board of Trustees had just announced her withdrawal and departure. And now we are in desperate need of finding a student who would represent the student body on the Board of Trustees during this time. And she said, she asked me if I would step in and serve out the remainder of the term. And I immediately shook my head. That's not my thing. I don't do that kind of thing. And then I stopped and took a moment to think about it. This was an opportunity for me to inhabit a leadership role that nobody else wanted. This was a moment in which my skills of deep listening and direct address might come in really handy. They could expand my heart. This could make me emerge from my comfort zone and help cultivate the conditions for my school to renew itself and thrive again. This was a moment in which I could do something, in which I could walk my talk, in which I could engage and encourage others to do the same. And it was my moment to let my light shine. Adaptive leadership is specifically about change that enables the capacity to thrive. They're looking for conditions that cultivate life. Ronald Heifetz and Marty Linsky in their book, The Practice of Adaptive Leadership, state that in order to be effective leaders, we build on the past rather than just get rid of all of it. We don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. We must ask ourselves, what is essential to preserve from history and what is expendable? How can we use what we've learned in the past to move us forward? Adaptive leaders must also be fluid and flexible and willing to think outside the box and try new things. We must learn how to improvise as we go, adapting to shifting sands and sudden storms. Life is a series of surprises, and the better we accept that, the better leaders we can be. Adaptation relies on diversity, building a culture that values diverse and views and ideas and relies less on the genius of a few and more on the voice of the many. And just as in biological evolution, adaptive change significantly displaces and rearranges the old DNA. In facilitating change and moving forward, there is always going to be something lost. By doing music in a new way in my Catholic church, we lost the grandeur and tradition of that large pipe organ. And there is always grief in that. As adaptive leaders, we must recognize and acknowledge the grief in order to make room for our hearts to expand to embrace what's new. And finally, change takes time, especially adaptive, sustainable change, especially when we are making time for grieving, especially when it involves our hearts. We must learn to practice persistence and patience. We must take the time to build trust and respect. We must remember that everything only looks permanent until its secret is known. But sometimes it takes a long time to dig down to those secrets. So we keep doing the work, slow and steady, sure and strong, listening for secrets and looking for ways in which we can pull in more voices, more bodies, and more hearts. And at this point, you're probably thinking, yeah, blah, 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 Shay, but how does this play out in real life? What does this actually look like? Well, a little more than 2 weeks ago, a troubled 19-year-old walked into Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Florida and killed 17 people and injured 14 more. Just a couple of days later, while still grieving, 18-year-old student Emma Gonzalez courageously stepped into leadership by publicly speaking out against gun violence. Over the past 2 weeks, this average teenager has represented her community in countless interviews and on social media, where she has amassed a following of over 1 million Twitter followers. She has sparked the March for Our Lives movement, inviting teenagers and their parents and teachers from all over the country to gather in Washington, D.C. on March 24th to speak out against gun violence. She has inspired George Clooney, Oprah, and Gucci to donate money toward this cause. She has encouraged Hertz and Delta and United Airlines to sever their ties with the NRA. And she has called for people to, and I quote, arm themselves with nonviolence by marching, registering to vote, and fighting for better mental health care for everyone. This is thinking outside the box. This is adaptive leadership. A teenager who up until 2 weeks ago would describe herself as someone who likes to draw, paint, crochet, knit, and watch Netflix, felt her heart break open, saw an opportunity in which she felt able and called to make a change, and stepped into that moment with all the vast force of her broken-hearted convictions. She stood up to, in her words, speak for those who don't have anyone listening to them. Speak for those who can't talk about it just yet, and speak for those who will never speak again. Emma Gonzalez reminds us of our past and calls us to change, and this will require a huge displacement of the status quo, the old DNA. We as a nation will have to let go of how we have always understood and interpreted our Second Amendment. We will have to try new ways of doing things, new angles of looking at mental health care and gun control. And these new ways will take a diverse array of opinions and experiences and ideas. Emma Gonzalez has begun this process by inviting people from all over the country to join her, by speaking bold words of truth to power, and challenging our complacency with something revolutionary. Martin Luther King did the same thing. So did Mahatma Gandhi and Nelson Mandela and Rosa Parks and Harriet Tubman and Clara Barton, Harvey Milk and Leslie Feinberg. So did my 9-year-old self when I imagined doing music in a different way in my church every Sunday. And so can you. In Zen Buddhism, there is a practice called the Three Tenets. Those three tenets are not knowing, bearing witness, and taking action. Each of the tenets reflects the others. They are seamlessly embedded in each other, flowing in an ever-unfolding and endlessly varied circle of life. And in an article entitled Entangling Vines, Thomas Kirchner describes the three tenets in this way. First is the not knowing. A letting go of fixed ideas about yourself, others, and the universe. Remember, life is full of surprises. According to Buddha, things are always unstable. We have a tendency to live life from a set of unquestioned beliefs that make our lives feel solid. And this is an illusion. Buddhist teacher Mazumi Roshi says, I'm not asking you to give up your ideas. But at least set them aside for a while, and you can go back and pick them up later. In this way, the practice of not knowing can align you with the ever-changing, interconnected reality of the life we live and the world we live in. In this way, you can be in the moment and be fluid and adaptable and open to experimentation. By cultivating a practice of being comfortable with not knowing, you increase your ability to be able to recognize moments in which your leadership can help cultivate the conditions for life. The second tenet is bearing witness. The practice of bearing witness is to see all of the aspects of a situation, including your own judgments and attachments and assumptions. When you bear witness, you open to the uniqueness of whatever is arising in this moment and meet it just as it is. On the morning of February 14th, when Emma Gonzalez got out of bed, she never imagined what would happen later that day or how her life would be different 2 weeks later. But somehow she was able to step up and meet the uniqueness of that moment and the energy and need that arose from it and meet it in the full reality of what had happened and how she needed to respond in unexpected ways. And that leads us to the third tenet, which is taking action. It is impossible to predict what action is going to be needed in any situation, or the timetable for when it will happen, or what might result from it. But the circle of not knowing and bearing witness is not complete without actually taking that step into leadership and taking the action in only a way that you can. With your unique and beautiful heart, your steadfastly sought after truths, the wisdom gained from your own personal sorrows and joys. And in recognizing that brilliance of the light that begins in you, in paying attention to where in the world you can use that light to cultivate life, in being brave enough to take a risk and try something new, you grow your soul and serve the world. You develop the resiliency of your spirit, and you deepen your sense of the reality that we live in, while your heart rushes on all sides outwards to new and larger circles with vast force. So my friends, perhaps this day we can let the light begin in us. Thank you so much.